listeners to Sounding Out's podcast series, an oral chronicle of sound and culture. Sounding Out remixes the everyday with theory, insight, and practice. To learn more, please visit us on the web at www.soundstudiesblog.com. Until then, stay tuned for today's episode.
And hello, faithful WHRW listeners. This is James Tilstey.
I'm Shauna Bossen.
I'm Jennifer Stover.
And we are here for the first installment of Listening In with Sounding Out. For those unfamiliar or uninitiated, Sounding Out has been a sound studies blog that is run by Professor Stover here, along with, I want to say, two other editors.
Yes. Aaron Trammell, multimedia editor, and Liana Silva is our managing editor. We have been running this blog for now eight years, mm-hmm. almost 9 years.
Quite the tenure.
Yes, and that is they're situated as well. I believe Aaron's in California.
Yes, Aaron's at UC Irvine, and Liana is in Houston.
Houston, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So this is not just a Binghamton franchise, although definitely has some Binghamton roots, but has definitely been trying to branch out in every single corner that we can into the study of sound. You can find the Sounding Out blog at soundstudiesblog.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Sounding Out Blog. You can like us on Facebook. We have a Tumblr and we also have an Instagram. So you can catch us in all sorts of formats.
Got all your bases covered.
Always.
Right. So for this show, we wanted to have a kind of program where we could present some of the stuff that gets posted on this blog, that gets discussed, stuff that I find is very interesting. A very cool cross-section of theory, of studying sound, of music, of all these different avenues that kind of come together in the art world, in, you know, pragmatic situations. I believe like one of the first articles I read this semester was about sound being weaponized, actually. Which was sound being used to like control rioters, which was kind of terrifying, but also very fascinating. Do you guys have any?
I thought that we could talk a little bit about how we, two Binghamton University students, got involved with running this radio show. James, you could start us off.
Right. So for those who have listened between 2:30 to 4 on Fridays last year, probably heard me in a far sillier context. I've been a devout WHRW-er for a while. And I just kind of wanted to take a platform and try to share some information about stuff that goes on campus. Kind of have my own PA show, a little talk show. And I began this internship with Sounding Out because I was very interested in sound studies. Being a kind of English and PPL, a lot of what I work in is in the context of literature and context of, you know, stuff that's less hands-on. As someone who makes music themselves and has a vested interest in sound, this was something that really appealed to me. So naturally, this seems like the perfect marriage. Sounding Out, radio, you can kind of combine them. There's even a Sounding Out sticker somewhere in the station lobby if you can find it.
So I shouldn't tell people where it is.
No.
Okay, fine. Find it for yourself. As I said, my name is Shauna. I have taken two classes with Professor Stover, and honestly, they were really the kind of theory that we discuss in sound in our daily landscape was kind of, you know, changed the way that I have interacted with a lot of the areas of study that I'm interested in, particularly the area that I intend on going into is museum studies. And so hopefully somewhere later in the show, we can talk about sound in museums. I would love that. But I am really, really happy to be here co-hosting the show for the Sounding Out blog. I've written a little bit for it in the past. And
Hey, I'm Professor Stover. I have been here at Binghamton now in the English department for 10 years, believe it or not. I started this blog in my second year. I was working with two amazing graduate students that were just phenomenal and really as interested as I was about how sound is influenced by culture. And really, my interest and research interest is listening and how our listening habits are shaped, particularly by race and gender, the intersections of race and gender, and our experiences being subject to those forms of oppression, and thinking about how it's impacted by that, but then also how we think about race and gender and how that impacts what we hear. So this kind of feedback between those two. So I've been researching that. I just had a book come out in November of 2016 called The Sonic Color Line, Race and the Cultural Politics of Listening, that is a really deep historical look at how American listening habits have been impacted since the 19th century concerning race, and really thinking through how race and sound are impact each other in a very long look. So the blog was a way for Aaron. It started out as a way for Aaron, Liana, and I to keep in touch, because Aaron was then leaving. He got his master's in comp lit here at Binghamton. He used to run Late Night Binghamton, actually, and I think he had a show on WHRW. And then he moved to go to graduate school in Rutgers in communications. Liana was moving to Kansas City to finish up her dissertation. She's a PhD graduate from the English department here. And we wanted to keep in contact with each other because we had this awesome intellectual connection. And we were also really not finding the kind of research on sound in listening that we wanted, research that took up issues of power and politics and wasn't just about celebrating sound and the power of sound, but actually really looking at, like you were mentioning, the weaponization of sound and all of these other factors that really involve questions of social identity. And we just weren't finding that research anywhere. And they were moving. We thought this would be a good way to keep in contact with each other and also produce the kind of work that we wanted to read, and making sure that graduate students, that emerging scholars, young career scholars, particularly women and people of color, got their work published and cited. And this became the go-to space to do that. All of us have a punk DIY background, and our ethos comes from that. Kind of like, if you don't find it, start it up yourself and figure out a way to do it ethically and sustainably. And that's was the origin of Sounding Out. At the beginning, we were the ones doing all the writing for it, which was crazy. we started having guests, I think, in 2010 might have been our first guest. Scott Polson Bryant was our very first guest. He was one of the founding editors of Vibe, and he wrote a piece on noise and his neighbors in New York City, and that was what started it off. And now we are pretty much all guest run. We have a few regular writers that check in with us every 3 months, but other than that, we are, open. We have open submissions, and sometimes we curate things if there's an idea we want to hear, like the Chicana Soundscapes panel that we have going this month. But yeah, that's kind of our origin story there.
Yeah, and I actually received a pamphlet from you, like once I started interning, was kind of a brief history of the blog itself. And I noticed that you intro it, and you're kind of hard on the medium of the blog itself, of like, yeah, this isn't the most academic, but we really just dedicate all our free time. You're like kind of poking fun at yourself. You're like, despite what I could be doing, I could be relaxing in all my free time, but instead I'm...
Yeah, it's just one big humble brag about how much time we put into Sounding Out. Well, in academia, there's this whole idea that it's been slow to adopt online scholarship as a form that is acceptable to tenure committees, et cetera. We didn't start this blog to get any of us tenured. We really started it to build a community and help build a field and shape the field in the direction we wanted it to go. So when we started, we called it Sound Studies Blog because, it's been almost 9 years. Blogging had a different connotation then. People just thought it was like you writing about what you were going to eat the next day or how you spent a year, not wearing any white t-shirts or whatever. People were doing these experiments. And so we intentionally took on blog because we wanted to kind of break the mold of the academic journal and open up the gatekeeping to new ideas. And one of our things, one of the ways in which we differ, besides being able to have pictures and sound embedded in there, for people that study sound, there's no better way to publish your work than with us, because you can actually have the clips and the pieces in there and work with them. Print just can't do that for an audiovisual field. And we all love print publishing. We all publish ourselves in print publications. We get very excited, you know, when we see it in material form. But we're able to be responsive really quickly to political events. That's one thing that's very important to us. We are able to be audiovisual. We also are able to have a different form of address. And part of it is also changing how we talk about scholarship. We want to have a voice that's accessible. We started out, all of us are first generation PhDs. None of our families have PhDs or in higher education. So this also started out as a way for us to explain to our families like what we're doing with our time and why we are always so busy, and explain our scholarship in a way that shows like the stuff we study impacts how we live our daily lives. It can help you understand how you are in the world and the forces that act on you better. So we've always tried to open it up and really shift the audience. It's all open access. Every writer, no one signs contracts with us. Everyone maintains their own copyright to the pieces. We allow reprints for everyone. We just want this stuff to circulate. We want to have a good time. We want to have fun. We have a mixtape we put out every year that has songs suggested by all of our writers. And you know, we want to have that pleasure in our work as we're taking on some really challenging issues and making it accessible.
This year, the mixtape was Songs of Rebellion, correct?
Yes, our mixtape, our theme was Resist this year for reasons that are obvious, I'd like to think. And so it was all songs to kind of galvanize our spirits and inspire folks to do the kind of work we need to do to change our current situation. So yeah, please, you can download. There's like 7 or 8 of them. They're all fantastic. You can download them. I learn about new bands and stuff all the time from the mixtape.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think probably one of my favorite things about the blog itself, and I'm just going to throw in another shameless plug, that's soundstudiesblog.com, is definitely just the breadth of material that's on here. You could open up this page and really not know what you're going to see the next day. And I think that's one of the most fantastic things. It's just like the amount of material that's been covered on here is really impressive.
Absolutely. It's also a very cutting edge, shameless plug in some capacities, I suppose. Field, there hasn't been a lot of scholarship put forth, so far. And it really, I believe you said it started within the last decade, correct?
Yes.
About that?
2009.
Yeah, and it's kind of to build up on what you said about how you can open it and see anything, even what you said earlier about how you didn't realize that authoritative groups used sound as an act of keeping people in line at protests, for example, which is totally, totally different from what we get to today about the Chicana soundscape. I think that's really, you know.
Yep. So we've tried, our logic behind that is to, this field is so diverse. There are people working, trying to study. This is like, you know, the humanistic study of sound, right? Where science only tells us so much about, you know, whether it's physics and thinking about vibrations, whether it's biology and physiology, thinking about our bodies as receptors. There's a point beyond which culture and history, etc., kick in and really shape that. So our hearing is an interchange between these factors. And so people started coming at studying sound from obviously music and musicology. But one of the things that Sound Study does that's so awesome is kind of blows that open and puts music in context and in connection with other sounds, like urban soundscapes, like sounds of voices in particular, like, certain kind of sounds within music. So it puts it all together and allows us to have a wider vision. So there's people, you know, who write for us that are video game sound designers. We have DJs writing for us. We have film scholars that write for us. We have literature scholars. One of my favorite pieces in the Chicana Soundscapes was all about Chicana literature. This is why Wanda Alarcon, who actually is an MA from Binghamton as well, PhD Berkeley, MA Binghamton English. And her post is all about Chicana writers mentioning things like video game sounds in their work and these 80s flashbacks. And what does it mean to flashback to the 80s? Why is that an important touchstone for Chicanas and Chicanas in LA? And so you have this diversity. So Sound Studies is so out there that we wanted to have a place where we could all come together and find something of interest every week and kind of find some common ground, but yet we want to push the boundaries of Sound Studies as far as we can go. So we're always out there looking for the latest work, where the field's going, challenging that same center that we kind of put together on Sounding Out. So it's kind of a move back and forth between those two things.
I think that was a really cool thing about that article as well, is it kind of forces you to kind of look from a different perspective of the 80s. I think we always see the kind of whitewash perspective of the 80s as well, this kind of is a different lens, and I think that's been a really valuable thing about this whole series. I particularly really liked the article about the entomology of core through Chicana punk sound. That specifically talked about artists who take the hardcore sound and kind of find a distinct identity through that, you know, be that with, you know, doing a traditional hardcore sound with lyrics that are in Spanish and just having a different presence, you know. It's really, really cool, kind of a Spivak, I was saying in the live before, it's kind of Spivakian almost, how it's like kind of reclaiming this cultural identity and using it in a way that really it hasn't been before. And I really enjoyed it, as well as the music just being super hard-hitting, you know? What better way to get your feelings across than with, you know, blast beats and tremolo picking, you know, backing you. So yeah, that's been one of my personal favorites from the series so far.
Absolutely. That was by Susana Sepulveda, and she also goes by Susie Riot. She is also herself a scholar who is in a punk band as well. So her perspective is so amazing because she is both a practitioner and a scholar as well. She's at the Department of Gender and Women's Studies at the University of Arizona. She is in the band, Los Angeles-based band called Las Sangronas y el Cabrón. And so I really liked how that piece was in dialogue with the one we published this week, which if you check out Sounding Out right now, soundcitiesblog.com, it'll be the first one that comes up. And it is on the dance called the Pogo and how pogoing in Los Angeles and the punk scene in particular was really important in its early days, when punk was very brown and very queer in LA. And that history has been effaced and erased.
And kind of a predecessor to what people refer to now as moshing, right?
Yes. Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, pogoing actually comes from England and came over, you know, through the punks in England to New York and to L.A., and a lot of the L.A. folks went out to England and came back and vice versa. And it was taken up as this way to the writer this week, Marlene Rios Hernandez, who is at University of California, Riverside in musicology, my hometown. And she's writing about this, a very different kind of dance. It's mainly like this kind of jumping straight, like you're on a pogo stick. That's where it comes from, like jumping straight up and down and kind of throwing your body into the air, but not necessarily doing it against other people so much, or it's kind of a sense of more of a dance. This article argues a dance of togetherness and community in a different way than what the Orange County hardcore folks came to call slam dancing, which then became moshing. And this piece actually argues that the kind of shift in music that happened when slam dancing started was kind of she called it a sonic gentrification, that both the movements, the violence of the movements, and the change in the sound was deliberately kind of pushing the folks that the Chicanas and Chicanos in particular out of the scene in Los Angeles. And so it's cool to read that one and then go back and read The Hardcore is Home, about the kind of reclamation of hardcore music, and the kind of shifting and, you know, appropriating or reappropriating a sound that was yours to begin with that you got pushed out of, and kind of seeing it as a place to think about yourself and your identity, and also break down assumptions. This whole piece is, you know, this whole series is breaking down assumptions of what Chicanos and Chicanas are, quote unquote, supposed to listen to, and really changing and shifting and, you know, breaking that down and, you know, and hearing from the listeners themselves.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's been really cool. And you don't realize how much goes into the development of culture. You know, you kind of always get the whole streamlined history of music. But there's really so much to, like, the subcultures that are present there. It's great to have a resource like this that's so dedicated to it. I want to go back to Hardcore is Home for a second and
sure.
just read one thing from the end of this article. It says, it talks specifically about the band Atraco, correct? It says, and they're a hardcore band that is fronted by a female Latina singer. And it says, Atraco offers a new way to conceptualize how Chicana punk subculture and sound is constituted through varying Latino and Latina identities and non-Chicana subjectives, and how it is also a site of home, belonging, and community for such participants, culminated through the act of listening. Listening is performative here, in the sense that it is part of the coring process of hardcore, as Chicana feminist praxis is enacted through hardcore sound. I like the notion of listening as performative, kind of a partake in the movement itself. You know, there's the music being made, but the act of listening to it is also an act of contributing, you know? There's something really empowering about that, and kind of, you know, something that's always driven me to other kind of forms of music and other wanting to learn about other cultures. I think a great entry point is always listening to the music, you know?
Absolutely. And thinking about, like, there's also a cultural stereotype in the U.S. that kind of listening is a passive act. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. All of these pieces have in common is looking at listening not just as active, not setting up a binary, but really thinking about the agency of listeners, and that listening is a form of participation, that listening is a form of, in this case, you know, finding home, creating a scene, and really helps us rethink about, you know, how music scenes are made. It's very much, our histories are very artist-focused. They're very kind of capitalist in terms of, like, here's some products, looking at music as products that were produced, and even as archival products that are left behind. But it takes so much to create, as you said, to create culture, to create a scene. And often what keeps the scene going are listeners, and is that kind of community created. And that's really difficult to, without this piece of you know, trying to understand how listening works, it's really been been suppressed in how we talk about musical culture.
Yeah, what is music if not political, right?
Absolutely.
I think that's been one of my favorite things about this is, you know, music is a reflexive act. You know, the music you listen to does reflect you in a way that can be intentional or can be unintentional. But I really liked just going through that article particularly and how it reflects that scene, you know. I think California has been a contentious and, you know, a centralized place in American culture. So it's really, I enjoyed reading that.
Also the best state. I'm unbiased.
Yeah. So I was maybe thinking I could just pull a couple lines from the Chicana Soundscapes introduction and kind of cap this off and kind of expand with a few quotes from this, kind of have a little discussion, kind of close it out.
I was going to say, that's written by Michelle Habel-Payan, who is an amazing music scholar. She was one of the curators, Shauna, for this exhibit that was at the Experience Music Project in Seattle called American Sabor, which was a history of Latino music in the Americas, mm-hmm. U.S. in particular. And so she did kind of like the liner notes and helped put together the sounds. And there's a whole section in there on punk in Los Angeles. Mm. And so we were very honored to have her write our intro and, you know, put this together. She's a great scholar. I love her work.
Yeah. So it says here, it's talking about particularly the Chicana Soundscape series in general and kind of, well, what the function of all these articles are. So it says, they continue the important discussion there. More than ever, we need panels, forums, dissertations, articles, and other forms scholarship that spotlight the ways vulnerable populations have been found to disrupt systematic oppression through the raucous listening. producing and community practices. This permits us that this fight is not over, that we are deep in it, and we have much strategy to share, which I think is a really cool concept. You know, not only is the art being produced, but we have people doing dissertations, we have people publishing articles, and taking part in these is a really valuable way of, you know, kind of staying politically and socially active and kind of getting involved in all these issues that, although I can't necessarily spell out because of certain, you know, station limitations, but just engaging in this culture and engaging in the scholarship that studies this culture as a way of, you know, staying cognizant of all. I don't know. Johnny, have anything?
God, I just think that the idea that this, you know, collection of articles is really exposing an idea, and it's what we talked about a couple of minutes ago about the idea that certain groups of people are supposed to, like, are expected to listen to certain genres of music or have certain sounds present. I think that exposing that kind of practice can really push this into what's our logo? Pushing sound studies into the red.
Oh, pushing sound studies into the red since 2009. Yeah, it's a super nerdy sound engineering reference. But yeah, it kind of means, yeah, pushing it over the edge, kind of, you know, breaking and distorting the things that seem like they're set. And often pushing it to, you know, making new sounds that you're not supposed to make. And this piece, Michelle's opening really points us to that, and that, you know, doing this research on how listening can be resistant, on how scholars can listen better to communities that have been silenced in academia, and that we can also, you know, sustain us, that this kind of work can sustain us and show us new ways of being in the world that'll help us push our own, you know, push the boundaries and limitations that have been placed on us into the red when we need to.
So I'm gonna throw out one more shameless plug. That is soundstudiesblog.com. You can find all things related to the field of sound, many amazing series, including the Sounding Out podcast, the Unsettling World Soundscape Project, Sound and Play, a lot of amazing series.
Don't forget Sonic Beyonce. We have a great series on Beyonce. I have no shame in my plugs.
So check that out at soundstudiesblog.com. This has been Listening In with Sounding Out. Hope you all have a wonderful Friday. And don't be afraid to pogo. Keep it locked.